Last week, we did an entire episode on Canadian election interference by the evil CCP regime. Well, an RCMP investigation seems to suggest it's worse than we thought. In a world where people would be honest rather than spin what they say, a foreign ministry spokesperson for China would have said something like this, quote, "You can say a lot about us. We murder political dissidents. We persecute any religious person. We've slaughtered babies in the womb. But election interference, that's just not fair. We wouldn't do that." Close quote. If Bill C-18 becomes law, Facebook and Instagram say they will end Canadians' access to news shared on their platform. Like we said last week, apparently Canada wants to become more and more like the CCP every day. And finally, Dr. Kieran Moore, Ontario's chief medical officer and expert regarding the memory hole, puts on a masterclass in gaslighting, obfuscation, and misinformation, assuring Ontarians that the provincial government never required COVID injections. They just suggested them, you know, like it was our decision to freely make. Friends, it's becoming increasingly difficult for Canadians to know who they can trust to bring them news and analysis from a, while biased, still honest and objective perspective. And that's what we're here for. We'll give it to you straight. So help us help you. It's March 14th. I'm Andrew DiBartolo. That's Matt Halleck. And this is a Liberty Dispatch.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. We're so thankful that you have joined us once again on the program, and we would like to ask you, wherever you're getting our content from, we would ask you to like, subscribe, rate, and review that content because it helps us get it out to more and more people. We're also resident on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. That's FLFnetwork.com. You can check out all our shows as well as a myriad of different wonderful podcasts over at the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network, FLFnetwork.com. They also have a handy app that you can get at your Google Play or your Apple App Store. So we would just ask that you would do that. Then you can get our content on demand right on your phone. It makes it nice and simple. It's a slick app, so we would appreciate you doing that. It will definitely help you get our content. Also, go over to our website. Everything Liberty Coalition Canada is over there at libertycoalitioncanada.com. Subscribe to our email list while you're over there. And if you would, please, at the top of the page, click the donate tab, or you can scan the QR code at the bottom of the screen here, libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate. That will help you give to us over there, because we're continually trying to build this institution so we can fight back against mainstream media, our government-sponsored narrative, all those things. And just as a note, if you would like to receive a charitable tax receipt for your donation, please make sure to donate to us at, if you're going to do a check, make it out to Christian Week. On the website, it's easy. It goes directly to what it needs to go to. Christian Week is our media partner, so we would ask you again, if you're going to go over there and donate, or you're going to send us a check, please make it out to them over there. And if you want to reach out to us, as always, please just reach out to us directly at mailbag@libertycoalitioncanada.com. That's how you can get a hold of us. And if you need to know anything regarding exactly donations that you've sent in or questions about that, that's give@libertycoalitioncanada.com. And if you want church-related questions, please reach out to us at churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com. That way we can get you the information you need as quickly as possible. So thanks again for tuning in.
Yeah, our mailbag question for this episode is something like this. Tell us, please, what is your favorite, and by favorite, I mean most despised instance of one of our elites trying to erase the past or reflavor the past and do a little bit of memory hole, say, "Oh, that never really happened. This we didn't do this. We didn't say this." So please share with us your most despised instance of you being gaslit by our elected officials. No, friends, you might think that woke politics and medical tyranny have destroyed the Canadian workplace, but did you know that some companies are standing up and saying no? Thousands of companies have pledged to honor free speech and medical privacy at redballoon.work, and Red Balloon is coming to Canada. Business owners, find top-tier, values-aligned talent and get help building an uncancelable pro-freedom workplace. Job seekers, find courageous companies that share and protect your values. Go sign up today at redballoon.work/LCC. Again, that's redballoon.work/LCC. Our first story this episode is connected to our last episode, where in its entirety, we spoke regarding election interference by the CCP into Canada and various people who are allegedly agents or connected with the CCP. And so we talked about Han Dong, an MP in the GTA, who was investigated by CSIS for having ties to the CCP, as well as Chinese interference in both the 2019 and 2021 elections. As expected, Justin Trudeau downplayed the concerns and called Canadians racist for even bringing up the concerns. Well,
of course.
Yeah, it turns out that those concerns are growing. Reports implicate a current MPP in the Ontario legislature in a Chinese foreign interference network directed by China's Toronto consulate during the 2019 election. This is from Global News, to their credit, who's been all over this story. Quote, an election interference network directed by China's Toronto consulate allegedly involved a sitting member of the Ontario legislature, according to sources with knowledge of the investigation into Beijing's covert efforts during the 2019 federal election. These sources assert that Vincent Kay, a progressive conservative member in Premier Doug Ford's government since 2018, served as a financial intermediary in Chinese Communist Party CCP interference schemes described in two separate Privy Council office intelligence reports reviewed by Global News. According to those same sources, Kay received around $50,000, part of a larger disbursement from the Chinese consulate in Toronto, in the $250,000 range that was channeled through a series of intermediaries. Kay has denied the allegations, of course. One of the documents that refer to the funding schemes in a January 2022 Privy Council office report, which asserts that the CCP's Toronto area network included 11 or more 2019 federal candidates, 13 or more aides, and an Ontario MPP.
Well, that's some crazy stuff. But wait, Andrew, there is actually more. Also from Global News, it reads as follows. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, are investigating allegations of two so-called police stations in Quebec that are suspected to be operated by the Chinese government officials. The RCMP confirmed by email on Thursday morning an open investigation by the Integrated National Security Enforcement Team in the province into the two alleged outposts, one in Montreal and the other in Brossard, a suburb of the city's south shore. The Federal Police Force added it's possible that Chinese Canadians have been victims of the possible activities conducted by these centers, quote unquote, and that any form of, quote, intimidation, harassment, and harm of diaspora communities or individuals in Canada will not be tolerated. Sergeant Charles Poirier said in an interview with the Global News that the probe has been going on for weeks, but could not provide an exact timeline. Quote, what we know is the Chinese community has voiced their concerns, Poirier said. Some people are threatened, some people are being intimidated, and we certainly need their cooperation to further our investigation. Poirier also confirmed it was the first time an alleged police station operated by Chinese authorities has been detected in Quebec by the RCMP. Based on RCMP investigations thus far, here is a picture of where these alleged Chinese police stations are located across Canada. So there you have it, in multiple locales in Ontario and Quebec, and also some in British Columbia, the Chinese Communist Party has infiltrated Canada. And that is absolutely, totally, and utterly concerning. There's a Beijing police stations in Canada. Unbelievable.
Yeah, one could say those are key locations as well.
Yes,
populated areas, high traffic areas where people are
the busiest. Some of the biggest Canadian cities. Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Being masters of propaganda and lies, the CCP has responded to the RCMP investigation in predictable manner. Foreign Ministry Mao Ning had this to say, and that's an unfortunate name that this person's first name is Mao, because when everyone thinks about the CCP and Mao, they think about all of the horrors and atrocities. But anyways, this foreign minister, Mao Ning, had this to say: Canada should stop sensationalizing and hyping the matter and stop attacks and smears on China. So much like our prime minister, that's racist. You're being racist. But listen to this line here. This is still a quote from the foreign minister. China has been strictly abiding by international law and respecting all countries' judicial sovereignty. So just so we're clear, the evil regime that murders dissident journalists and political opponents, that forces Muslims into re-education concentration camps, that has engaged in a multi-decade pre-born baby slaughter, that created COVID in a lab and lied to the world about its origin and release, they respect international laws and play by the rules? That's a joke. What a joke. We can see right through this, Pravda. And apparently, so do many Canadians, including liberal voters. So according to an Abacus poll released last Friday, 71% of liberal voters want a public inquiry into potential Chinese election interference. 71%. And of all the respondents, 44% of Canadians polled believed that the CCP did in fact attempt to influence the Canadian elections. Now, that breaks down in terms of some of them thought that they were successful, some thought they weren't successful, some were indifferent. But in either way, essentially just under half of the Canadians polled said, yeah, we believe the CCP tried to influence the Canadian elections. And like you said, Matt, that number, 71% of the liberal voters want a public inquiry. Good for them that they see through all of this and they see through that nonsense that you can't just say we're racist and you can't lie to us and say, oh, the CCP is an upright, moral, evil empire that, you know, maybe they don't murder as many people as Stalin did, right? They're not that bad. They're pretty good, all things considered. Is their response to this?
Yeah. I mean, it's telling that 71% of liberal voters want a public inquiry, but our prime minister continues to obfuscate. He continues to downplay the interference by the rogue nation state of China that is totally a dictatorship, that is responsible, as you made mention, for some of the worst human atrocities over the last decades. And I mean, it's truly despicable that the supposed transparency prime minister, as we said on the last program, refuses to give up control of this process to a more independent and open and public inquiry, instead electing to appoint his own special rapporteur, who he has veto authority over and can make sure that these meetings take place in secret. Now, what they'll say is they're concerned about public safety and national security, given the nature of what's going on and how this could affect foreign affairs and stuff like that. But we all know that is a bunch of bunkum, and that what we're seeing here is politicians just trying to bury what is an absolutely massive news story. Because, Andrew, this is the very thing that our friends to the south in America spent tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of public funding to see if that evil Donald Trump was some sort of Russian stooge. Well, it turns out that we have Chinese stooges across the political spectrum in Canada, influenced directly by the CCP, and they're across our nation having police stations that are putting unspeakable pressure upon Chinese national Canadians to vote in a way that is favorable to the CCP. These things are happening in Canada, and given the fact that there's credible allegations that we actually have federal MPs that are sitting in our parliament right now who are Chinese stooges, and now we have credible allegations that we have an Ontario parliamentarian as a Chinese stooge, and that there's multiple police stations set up across our nation by the CCP, we have to look into the level of interference in the most transparent and objective way possible across this nation, because this is a massive story that has massive implications. And the reality of it is, it seems that our government officials knew of this, of some level of Chinese interference, and instead of being open and honest about it, they tried to bury it, and in many ways benefited from it. So that's the scandal of this hour, and this is a huge story.
All these red flags, all these concerns aren't coming from Joe Canuck's YouTube channel. This is coming from the RCMP. This is coming from CSIS. I mean, this is coming from these federal law enforcement securities agencies, which are no friend to conservatism, right? Mm-hmm. If anything, they will do the bidding and the will of their progressive masters. So the fact that they, right, Global News, I said credit to Global News, the fact that Global News is breaking this story, that they are all over this, this doesn't score political points with them, right? This isn't red meat for their base, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they can't even hide this, that they have to speak about this, it lets us know that it's so obscene, it's so ridiculous that you can't hide this story. And say what you want about Trump, and there's a lot to be said about Trump. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, he was correct that China is a much larger geopolitical threat to the West than Russia is for numerous reasons. But this is one, because the Russian election interference was really a nothing burger. But this seems to be
the CCP literally has police stations across our nation. It's totally absurd.
They're not police stations. So if you ask them, they'll say that they are information centers to help Chinese Canadian nationals.
Where we use the information that we have on your family home in China
to like the Sharia courts that are all over England.
Yeah.
Are nothing more than Muslim religious centers, right? That's what they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a massive story, Andrew.
And we're not done with it yet. No, there's more that's going to be coming out. There's more that they're going to dig up, and we're going to keep coming back to what's going on.
And we'll see if Teflon Trudeau can just shake this off his back as well. Also, I just wanted to make comment. I hope people aren't surprised that one of the people implicated in this might be an Ontario conservative parliamentarian.
No, they're the worst.
Like, I hope our audience at this point understands what we've been saying about the massive uniparty, the conservatives, especially at the provincial level in Ontario. There's serious problems in all these parties in Canada, and that's why we're speaking out. Like, we are not a partisan broadcast in favoring one party over another party.
We'll just tell you who not to vote for. Yeah.
Well, and
shouldn't vote for.
And we'll hold every party equally accountable to the objective standard of the Word of God, right? Nobody gets around that, whether you're Max Bernier, who we had an open, honest, frank conversation on abortion and why he's wrong on that issue. Whether you're Justin Trudeau or Pierre Poilievre, we're going to use the same standard that we use on ourselves, right? That we're going to use on them and their politics. So that's why having that normative Christian worldview perspective gives us something that you're not going to get from other places. And I think that's crucial in order to rightfully critique all actors, no matter what color jersey they're wearing and everything. So I just wanted to point that out.
Well, our federal government's response to economic difficulties is to print money until it's worthless, driving up the cost of everything, essentially stealing from your hard-earned pay. They want to monitor your spending by way of a centralized digital currency, and they want to control you by way of digital ID. What you need is to take control of your own resources and be responsible for your own money, which is your responsibility. Bull Bitcoin wants to help you do just that. Bull Bitcoin is a 100% self-funded, freedom-minded Canadian Bitcoin exchange that wants to protect your financial freedom and help you protect your resources. If you're at all aware of what's going on in our country in light of this episode and essentially all of them, you should seriously consider connecting with my friends over at Bull Bitcoin. So you can sign up at mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC, have all of your questions answered. That's mission.bullbitcoin.com/LCC. So as I said in the lead-in, it looks like both from our elected officials, from our media apparatus, and even from big tech, there is this momentum driving Canada to be more and more like the evil CCP regime. And this is just another story of that. Matt, do you want to tee this one up?
Absolutely. From one censorious regime to another, here we go, Andrew. This is also a massive news story coming to us from the Globe and Mail. And the Globe and Mail reports that tech giant Meta, that's Facebook, they own Facebook is Meta and Instagram and all those things, they have decided to block Canadians' ability to view or share news content on Facebook or Instagram if Ottawa's online news bill, that's Bill C-18, becomes law. The utterly inane Bill C-18, which we've covered in depth on the program before a while back. I'll try and link that in the descriptions below so you can check out that program where we go more in depth into the bill. I'll also link the bill as it pertains to where it currently sits in Parliament, all those things. You can see the bill in its entirety and where it is in the Senate right now. So you can just do some research yourself. But this bill that it has gone through the House of Commons, it's currently being debated in the Senate. This bill would force third-party news aggregators, search engines, and social media websites and platforms to pay news outlets for sharing or linking to news stories on their respective platforms. The compensation requirements include news which is merely shared on the platforms by various users. So, for example, that means Facebook and Twitter would be liable to pay, let's say, the global news, if I or anybody else were to link a story on their Facebook or their Twitter concerning something like what we've been covering, Chinese interference into Canadian elections and Canadian politics. That, my friends, is absolute madness. This is literally a piece of legislation that will totally upend the relationship between the producers of the news, the consumers of the news, and the mediators of that news content. Now, here's traditionally how third parties like Google, Facebook, Twitter, etc., have provided a valuable service to both producers and consumers. They have these unbelievably sophisticated platforms and programs that allow people who want to access them, whether through a search engine or for a social media connection, they have people flooding to their specific platforms for either searching up information or staying connected with friends or expressing themselves publicly on these platforms. So they have a massive community, eyes and ears, that go onto these platforms. And what has typically been the relationship is, oh, producers recognize, oh, these platforms exist. This will help us get our news out to more and more people. So the producers of the news make use of these intermediary third-party platforms to then advertise or get news out to the consumers of the news. So that's where that intermediary comes in that says, hey, we have a huge audience. You have news. You want your news to go to more people. Well, you can pay for advertising, or we can platform you. We can help you market yourself in many cases for free on our platform so that you can then market yourself. You can then reach a mass amount of people that you would not be able to have otherwise. However, the bill in this case would force the intermediary who's providing this invaluable service to both consumer and producer to pay the producers to link consumers to their content. And that's if they don't even share it. If I go on there and I share a link, it's now incumbent on Facebook to pay the Globe and Mail or Global News or whatever money for me sharing a link on their platform. I mean, it's totally insane. And Andrew, I think everybody knows we're not huge fans of big tech here on the program, because they've shadow banned us. They've literally outright banned us. They've done a bunch of stuff to our content that's really annoying. But it doesn't stop the fact that they're right when they actually highlight that this bill is totally and utterly insane. Yep.
Yes. So Lisa LaVenture, a Meta spokesperson, had this to say about the potential passage of Bill C-18. Quote, if the Online News Act passes in its current form, we will end the availability of news content on Facebook and Instagram for people in Canada. A legislative framework that compels us to pay for links or content that we do not post and which are not the reason the vast majority of people use our platform is neither sustainable nor workable. And I'll just interject there by saying, if there's one thing that our federal government is really, really good at, it's failing at things that are both sustainable and workable. They excel at that. So because of the madness of this bill, Google has taken it upon themselves to conduct a 5-week trial where they will limit news content from Canadian sources for 4% of the Canadian population, which apparently Google failed to warn the nearly 1.2 million Canadians about. We talked about this in a previous episode. In a tweet, vocal critic of the bill, Michael Geist, pointed out at Google's news shadow ban as proof of why everyone loses with mandated payment for links. Google loses trust, media lose traffic, and government undermines the foundation of the internet. So here's a question. If so many people stand to lose from Bill C-18, who stands to gain from it? Or let's frame it another way. who are the people who will actually lose and be negatively affected with the passing of Bill C-18? And who are the people who will, in some sense, gain from it? So I think it's fair to say that the people who lose from it right off the bat are Canadians.
Yeah.
People who use these platforms as an opportunity to not only share news stories, mm-hmm. but it's, for many people, it's their source of news. People don't wake up in the morning and get the morning paper anymore. They don't turn on the radio. What they do is they flip open their phone, they open up Facebook, and they start scrolling, and they're like, well, these pages I've liked and subscribed, what's the new stories, what's coming in?
It's maybe all on my phone. So, and then, hey, I have a cool article. I'm going to share that with friends. You know, like,
right?
Yeah.
We will be the ones who will suffer from it. So, let me really throw a big lofty softball pitch. Mm-hmm. If you have the passing of certain legislation that will severely negatively affect the citizenry, then why would the government pass this legislation? Who else seeks to gain from it if the average citizen loses? Mm-hmm. Matt, do you have any insight into that question?
I actually do, Andrew. And the funny part is the insight comes from just looking at what a parliamentary budget officer had to say about the potential consequences of this bill. It's not rocket science. I don't have to, I say, go to Joe Canuck, as you've said, and find some conspiracy theory. This is literally a quote from the PBO. Around the $329 million that the bill would generate for news outlets, around $247 million would go to broadcasters such as CBC, Bell, Shaw, and Rogers. I think Bell and Rogers, or Shaw and Rogers, they're also going to become the same thing soon. So, interesting. Which means of that $329 million that the bill would generate, only $81,550,000 a year would go to things like newspaper and online media. And Michael Geist had this to point out. He said, the fact that three quarters of the money will be going to broadcasters, some of which are the richest companies in Canada, pause, yes, obviously. Have you seen who owns your stadium? Who owns your hockey arena? It's almost always big telecommunication and broadcasting companies, you know, almost exclusively in Canada. They're massive. And they also are companies who are being investigated for trust busting because of monopolies and ridiculous amounts of money that us Canadians actually have to pay for telecommunication services. All those. That's just a side note to what Guy said here. But so money's going to the richest companies, plus public broadcasters, which are also heavily subsidized already, which, as Geist points out, this undermines the very premise of the bill that the government is trying to put forward, because they're saying this is going to help the average small Canadian news service compete on a global scale. So again, this is like mercantile protectionism in the 21st century that is both uneconomic, unsustainable, and idiotic to a T. And
so you've basically described our federal government in three
exactly.
wonderful words.
Exactly. Yeah. And honestly, I don't think, you know, Pablo Rodriguez or Gutierrez or whatever the heck his name is, the minister who's putting all this stuff forward, he's saying, well, you know, this is just Google and Meta flexing their muscles and not operating in good faith with the Canadian government. The Canadian government isn't operating in good faith. This is a totally insane bill that they're trying to put forward that would totally, absolutely eat into Facebook and Google's all their profits, and it actually undermines the value of the service that they're providing. It essentially says that they're not providing the valuable service that they are, and the value is only in the producer providing the service, something that they have to pay for, which everybody who uses the internet understands that is not the case. Places like the Globe and Mail, we use these platforms to reach an audience. They provide us a great service, and in many cases, it's free for us to do that. It just totally is an insane bill from start to finish that cannot possibly be in good faith when you just understand how utterly inane the whole thing is. And the fact of the matter is, Canada is not a big market, and I'm not surprised that Facebook's saying, well, we're just not going to allow Canadians to access news on our platform anymore, because we're not going to leave ourselves liable to this. We're not going to pay for this. This is totally insane. And I'm not surprised Google is shadow banning news content to test it out in case Bill C-18 passes. Because if I were them, I'd say, well, sorry, Canada, your government just passed this insane bill. It's going to, as a business, it's no longer viable for us to continue to provide you news, which then will have this insane effect that the only people you'll be able to get news from are centralized big legacy news media companies, and you will not have access to alternative information in the way that you have, which goes to benefit the government, who pays and subsidizes 150 plus media outlets across this country. So this is a bill that's going to hurt average Canadian citizens. It's going to centralize news and communication, which is going to benefit government and legacy medias and big broadcasters and telecommunications at the detriment of Canadians' freedoms and freedom of information. That is what we're dealing with. This is our government totally changing the nature of how the internet works, and it seems like it's going to benefit their cronies more than anybody, and that's the why this is as big as a story as it actually is.
So in light of this, this is why we want to ask you and encourage you to help us become cancel proof and help us continue to do this. So the reality is, you might not be able to get our stories on Facebook, or you might not be able to find certain videos on YouTube. You already can't find certain videos of ours on YouTube. So what we want to do is, we want to continue to help you so that you can get the trusted news and analysis and understand what's going on in the world and in Canada. So a couple different things. One, head over to our website. Make sure you subscribe to our email, because we will send out our emails daily with links to our shows on platforms that hopefully won't be canceled so quickly, so you can still get our content. So subscribe to our stuff. And that means tell other people to subscribe as well. Share it out. And when you go to these platforms, make sure you like it, make sure you comment on it, make sure that you share it again, watch it, subscribe to all our media channels, our media outlets. So that's the first thing. Sign up, subscribe, so you get contacted directly from us. The second thing is this: help us, please support us so that we can continue to grow this institution, so that we can continue to bring you not just news and analysis and commentary, but more content, written content, more interviews, all the sorts of stuff to help equip and train and teach and inform Canadians. And so keep your eyes open. We've been talking about this, but when we kind of open up our club membership, our subscription-based membership, where we offer additional content, extra content behind the paywall, extended interviews, exclusive stuff that is only for our club members, perks and benefits from friendly companies and other organizations, please, please prayerfully consider joining us in that. Consider donating and supporting, becoming a monthly member once we roll out our subscription club membership, so that you can find our stuff, so you don't have to worry about it getting canceled or not able. So what? So we don't have a presence on Facebook and YouTube anymore. Well, you can still find our stuff. You can still access our exclusive content. So please think about joining our club membership when we roll it out, which Lord willing is going to be in the near future as we're sorting out some final things.
Yeah, and you know, there's some scenarios that we're working on that will allow you to have our content at your fingertips directly. You don't have to go through an SEO or anything. You can just get it, and in really interactive, really high-tech ways. So we're excited about it, and we would continue to ask that you would pray for us that we can execute what we have planned. And then also, if you would prayerfully consider leaving a donation, that just helps us continue to build towards a future where we're taking all these various internet censorships and online streaming regulation acts and all these things into consideration, so we can continue to reach out to you and continue to be a voice for independent Canadian media and independent thinkers like yourself. So it's all very important.
Question for our audience. Are you comfortable speaking with your financial advisor about your faith and how your investment should align with biblical principles and truth? Or are you ridiculed for expressing your beliefs and concerns with the direction of our country? We have been talking about our friends at Rocklink Investment Partners for a while now. And one of the main reasons we recommend their service to our audience is they share our Christian faith and worldview. At Rocklink, they're concerned with the same issues that we are. They're willing to have open and honest conversations with you to put you on the right track to achieve your goals while mitigating many of the risks surrounding us. Ask yourself, are you getting that level of service and alignment with your current financial institution, or are you just another brick in the wall? Email Rocklink at info@rocklink.com or visit them at www.rocklink.com. That's link with a C, LINC. Well, now I want to issue a trigger warning, and the trigger warning is if you find yourself nauseated by the sound of our prime minister, then the voice that you're about to hear, though not his, might create some sort of acid reflux, some sort of gag reflex reaction in you as well. Not just because of the voice itself, but because of the utter evil gargoyle snake-like content that we're about to hear. So you have been warned. If you get nauseous easily, go take a grab all, come back and make sure you have some ginger beside you to help settle your stomach, because this might be upsetting. So for our last story, what we want to start by doing is mention that the School of Policy Studies at Queen's University held a panel recently titled COVID at 1,000 Days. Various people shared and made comments, including this woman who we're about to listen to. Now pay attention to the response from Dr. Kieran Moore, Ontario's chief medical officer. And I'll say this again, if you're driving, or if you're doing something that would be dangerous for you to have a fit of rage and anger, stop. Make sure you're sitting down. Have your pillow and your favorite stuffy beside you, or your stress ball, so you don't punch a hole in the wall. And you have been forewarned.
In May of 2021, my brother-in-law died from a vaccine injury, and that was verified by the chief coroner of Eastern Ontario, Dr. Paul Dungy. And in his report, Dr. Dungy said that he could not rule out a genetic component to the death. My husband was mandated to take two vaccinations in order to keep his job of 20 years at Queen's University without recourse to any conversation with anyone regarding any concerns around that. And this created an immense psychological and emotional trauma for him that continues to this day. Two of our children in their late 20s decided not to be vaccinated, not because they were so-called anti-vaxxers, but because they were afraid and they had personal reasons not to be vaccinated. And yet they were their lives were made a living hell. They were ostracized. They were vilified. They were called misogynistic, racist, selfish, and they were none of those things. They were simply, you know, concerned and made a different decision for themselves. So I guess my question would be, what can we do in the future from a public health perspective and a policy perspective to make sure that there is room in the conversation for everyone's lived experience, including my own families, which is different than most people? Thanks.
I'd add my condolences on the death of your family member. And hopefully you've had also discussions with the Vaccine Injury Support Program. That is a federally mandated program that is, its purpose was to be transparent and accountable, yet that, yes, there are negative untoward effects of vaccine, and individuals who come forward to get vaccinated to protect themselves and their family and their community should be compensated. So I hope that that process is available to you. From the government's vantage point, when we asked for a vaccine policy. That policy, if should have been to the point that if you don't get vaccinated, they offer whatever the policy was. They offered an alternate to the individual. So if the school didn't want you to come to the classroom at a university or college, then you would be allowed virtual. So in our vantage point, we wanted it to be a policy framework rather than a mandate, and we did not have a mandate in Ontario from this government's vantage point. But clearly, organizations were able to adopt or modify that policy to their, I would assume, to their belief system or need at that time. And I'm very sorry for the untoward negative feedback that your families received regarding their immune status.
What Dr. Moore said on behalf of the Ontario government is essentially this: we never mandated anything with regard to the injection. We never made anything law. It was just policies. That's what that man just said. He said that we made a policy and then we encouraged businesses to make their own policies, but we never mandated anything. We never said that it was a law and that you would get punished if you didn't follow this. No. And we're very flexible too with all the different ways that people could be excluded or exempt from this thing. Like, it was very free and very, very skipping down the park with roses and ice cream. And so we're going to hold back on our comments because I'm trying to even though I've seen that particular clip about a dozen times, I'm still trying to gather my composure before I say something that will be unbecoming of a follower of Christ. But we want you to hear from Dr. Moore himself and the past comments that he has made with regard to the jab and the rollout of the non-mandate mandates, as he would say. So let's play this first clip we have here.
We must take assertive action to protect the health and safety of all Ontarians. The policies I am announcing today are an important link in the chain of protection that will help keep Ontario strong in the face of the fourth wave. That is why I am issuing a directive to require COVID-19 immunization policies in hospitals, home and community service providers, and ambulance services. Effective September 7th, the directive will require covered organizations to implement policies that require their employees and others in these sectors to either provide a proof of full vaccination against COVID-19, provide a documented medical reason for not being vaccinated. In addition, covered organizations will be required to offer an educational session about the benefits and risks of COVID-19 vaccination. In cases where individuals do not provide full proof of vaccination, they will be required to undergo regular testing and demonstrate continued negative results. This directive outlines the minimal standard that is expected. Should an organization choose to implement policies that go above and beyond, they will have the authority to do so. But policies for these sectors is not enough. That is why we are intending to proceed with vaccination policies in other sectors. Finally, we are pausing our exit from the roadmap to reopen. We need to get the vaccination policies in place and our vaccination rates up.
So there you have it, Andrew.
So lots of talk of policies. Now I want to. But he said directive, right? So let's kind of just very briefly. They put injection policies into place, but they didn't mandate them. That was up to various businesses, right? Now, who runs our healthcare system? That's the provincial government. They run our healthcare system. Who just told healthcare system employees that they needed proof of injection? Well, the provincial government just told healthcare system employees that they needed it. So, therefore, who just mandated the jabs in all healthcare settings? The provincial government. That's who.
And Andrew, I just want to also interject here because I'm not from Ontario, but this sort of thing happened across the country, and I was interacting with a conversation that was held by the Real Talk, Reform Talk guys, with MP Will Bauma and Sam Oosterhoff, both MPs in that kind of Southern Ontario area, both who are in the Dutch Reform community, the same that I am currently a member in, just in Manitoba. They were talking about mandates and mandatory policies, and even they recognize that there was one sector that the province actually mandated vaccinations for, and that was for healthcare. So those are two Ontario MPs who have realized that they did mandate these vaccines for a sector of the population. Now I would say that it was also a little slippery, because what the government did is, now this is the distinction that Sam and Will were trying to make, is we didn't mandate vaccines. It's not like in order to be to continue to be a citizen in Ontario, you need to get, everybody needs to get these jabs and we're forcing the jabs into you. That's what they wanted to say mandates were, essentially. But what the government actually did is mandate and require these things through the back door, that they were requiring businesses, different coverage providers, different sectors to ensure that these things were taking place. Otherwise, they would be held liable. So essentially,
We're going to see the wording in a bit from the actual Government of Ontario website. It wasn't just a policy.
No,
behind it was threat of punishment. And the example that I'm trying to communicate here with the healthcare system would be something like this. If I were to say, you know, in my family, I don't tell my kids what to do. Mm-hmm. Like I don't require them to do anything. Here's what I do say, though. Anyone who lives in my house must do what I say.
Yeah.
That's all. Now, do my kids live in my house? Yes, they do. Does that mean they have to do what I say? Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But can I still say, but I don't tell them what to do. I've never said to my kids, you must do what I say. I've only said that if you're going to live in this house, you have to do what I say. But I mean, that is the game that Dr. Moore is playing. Let's cue up this next clip. We're going to see that despite this clip of COVID in 1,000 days, whatever language they used, whatever euphemisms they used, they knew and we all knew what they were actually doing. Let's play this next
clip. Businesses will have to be able to verify that your second dose plus 14 days to let you go inside these non-essential services. So that'll be a learning curve, and we will work with businesses and the community to try to ensure that this process is adopted smoothly and safely in all jurisdictions across Ontario. There'll be a learning curve. This first week is all about education, how to interpret the vaccine certificate, how to ensure that it's safe as we go indoors, and we will be minimizing any enforcement over this coming week. It really is about education of businesses and the community of how to present your certificate and how it should be used appropriately to keep our indoor settings safe.
How long do you anticipate this to be in effect, this passports or certificate program?
We'll have to follow the data. That'll be a data-driven decision. We know that this virus wants to spread more aggressively in the cold months as we go indoors, as the humidity levels go down. And so we'll be watching the data and the risk. As soon as we have a high enough immunization rate and the risk is down, we want to remove most public health measures sequentially over time.
So just so we're clear, you don't require and enforce policies, especially if they're merely suggestions. You also don't have people arrested and fined for breaking your suggested policies. You also don't have the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal shut down essentially every complaint because people suffered at the hands of a policy. No, this was much more than that. So one final stop on this nightmare road trip as we examine past comments made by Dr. Slippery Snake.
Would you, doctor, feel confident that an unvaccinated person could go and work in a long-term care facility now?
I think we've improved the infection prevention and control practices significantly in long-term care. I think as we head to low endemicity and low-risk environments in that setting, we should absolutely review all measures that have been put in play.
Moore noted that a vaccine mandate for long-term care workers came from the minister responsible for that sector, not the chief medical officer.
What a joke. Like just that last line. So Dr. Moore said jab mandates didn't. So in the first clip, Dr. Moore said definitively jab mandates did not come from the provincial government. But earlier in the clip we just saw, so that the date of that is before the first clip, he said it came from a different branch of the provincial government. So it did come from the provincial government. It just didn't come from his particular branch of the provincial government, because you know that they're totally separate and distinct and one isn't influencing the other. Therefore, it didn't come from the government, even though it did come from the government. It just didn't come from his branch of the government. Matt, I'll give you first crack at this rubbish. Why don't you take it?
Well, I mean, this is the kind of... It's just obfuscation.
I know. Sky, gasp.
Yeah. And that's honestly, you know, maybe the best analysis, because that actually captures what people were feeling throughout the pandemic and these changing rules. And the fact of the matter is, you can play linguistic games like Dr. Anthony Fauci did when it came to gain of function research. What we now know is the origins of the coronavirus were made in a lab in Wuhan through the process of gain of function. Essentially, you can argue semantics, but that's what happened, is they were enhancing the H2 receptor that binds to human beings and allows for this kinds of SARS-CoV-2 disease to transmit in humans. And that's the very thing that leaked from that lab that led to the COVID-19 pandemic. So whether or not that meets the definition of gain of function or whatever, it doesn't really matter. What matters is what happened. And this is essentially Moore and other politicians like them, you know, playing word game, playing semantic tricks to try and get around their culpability for what they put into place as political actors. And I've seen it even in churches. Oh, we never put a mask policy in place. We just said anytime you didn't have to wear masks during worship, you just had to wear a mask when you were in the building. Okay, but aren't we worshiping every Sunday in the building? Does that not include worship? Yes. So by the transitive principle, you're saying in order to worship God in the body of believers, in the place that we're gathering, I have to wear a mask. No. But like, those are the games that have been played. And that's the reality of the situation is the government put insane amounts of coercive power on people to get vaccinated by artificially declaring some things essential, some things not essential, and then limiting people's access to ordinary civic activities that free Canadians have always participated in based on their vaccination status. So they create this category, they determine the category, and then they say anybody who does not meet this certification by getting vaccinated cannot participate in these things. Now, they can say, well, we didn't make anybody get the vaccine. Well, what they did is they threatened various sectors with significant penalties and fines if they do not implement these policies.
Not only the businesses, but the reality is any government employees were mandated. So it's yes. not, and this is the point that even if we give him the point that, well, other businesses like restaurants and gyms, we just basically told them to implement their own policy. The reason why what he said is junk is because in all levels of education, healthcare, transit, any kind of federal, any kind of provincial employee, it was required of them. It wasn't a policy. It was mandated that they must do these things. And even the language of the businesses, like I just, this is right from, so I, just because apparently they think that we either A, have no memory, or B, we just can't look up stuff on our own. But here on the Dispatch, we present you with all the receipts because we never want to be in a position to say it's our opinion apart from fact. So this is, and all the links are still there. We have all the links for you. I don't know how much longer they're going to be up because until they realize that, they see we're liars. But this is right from the Reopening Ontario Act, Section 2, General Compliance is the name of the section, subsection 2.2. Listen to this language here, and you tell me if this sounds like we just want to encourage you to have a policy. The person responsible for a business or organization that is open shall operate the business or organization in compliance with any advice, recommendations, and instructions issued by the Office of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, including any advice, recommendation, and instructions. Now listen to this. This is subsection B, requiring the business or organization to establish, implement, and ensure compliance with the COVID-19 vaccination policy. That isn't just we want you to make a policy. That's you are required to establish, implement, and ensure that people comply with a COVID-19 vaccination policy. This comes from the Government of Ontario's Proof of Injection Policy site. Listen to this language again. As of September 22nd, 2021, Ontarians will need to be fully vaccinated, 2 doses plus 14 days, and provide their proof of vaccination along with photo ID to access certain public settings and facilities. These mandatory requirements, would not apply to outdoor settings where the risk of transmission is lower, including patios, with the exception of outdoor nightclub spaces given the risk associated with the setting. In addition, these requirements will not apply to settings where people receive medical care, food from grocery stores, medical supplies, and the like. And finally, right from the Ontario Human Rights Commission, under the provincial regime, organizations are responsible for making sure that they meet the required proofs of identification and vaccination as outlined in the regulation. That's not just, hey, it'd be a good idea for you to put a policy. Required proofs of vaccination as outlined in the regulation. It continues. Service users must make sure any information they provide to the organization to show proof of vaccination or proof of qualifying for an exemption like a doctor's note, and if identification is complete and accurate. There are fines for both individuals and organizations that fail to comply. Now, This is the government of Ontario. This is the Ontario Human Rights Commission. And this is the Reopen Ontario Act. I've read you directly quoted from those sources. You ask yourself the question, does that sound like a... We're just implementing a policy that you have to create a policy. And then if your policy is harsh, that's up to you. Or does that sound like we are telling you, you must have a proof of injection policy. And if people don't comply with it, you'll be in trouble or they'll get in trouble. There will be fines for both the individuals and the organizations that do not comply with these mandatory requirements. Listen to this again. Listen to that over again. Go to the links and ask yourself the question, is this just a, we never mandated anything. We just had policies. Or is this an example of, no. We told you what you must do. And if you don't, you will suffer. Again, go back to my analogy. It's what they really said. Listen, we're just kids. Do whatever you want in our house. Or did they say, if you live in my house, you have to follow my rules or you get kicked out of my house. But I never told my kids to them to their face they have to do whatever I say. That's what they're trying to spin. And I'm grieved over the fact that many Canadians will probably fall for the word salad and all of the shady communication. But
It's misdirection. It's the same way as our politicians love to say we have free health care in Canada. You should never have to pay for health care in Canada. It's just we pay indirectly. We don't pay directly. We pay indirectly, and we also pay for the massive bureaucracy that has to administer the government-run health care. They seem to think that because you don't do something directly, it doesn't actually mean that you're doing that thing. And that's this thing that, that they seem to want to maintain over and over and over and over again throughout various sectors of our community. And they keep kind of, trying to get around the mandatory thing by saying, like, we didn't force anybody to get a vaccine. That wasn't our policy that you must get vaccinated. Therefore, we didn't have a mandate. We just said, if you're not vaccinated, you can't do these things, or you can't keep your job, or you can't, we're not forcing you to get vaccinated.
That's all
we said. And again, that's just creating a false dilemma via a false choice, right? Where you restrict and limit the amount of options to just a certain amount and say, well, we didn't force you to do it. We gave you a choice. You had the choice to get vaccinated or not get vaccinated. There's consequences of the choices that you make. So if you didn't make the choice to do the right thing and get vaccinated, that comes with the consequence that you can't go to a movie or you can't do this or you can't go worship or, whatever it might be. But the requirement you've added, a requirement that is not necessary to partake into those things that then limits the choice and creates this false dilemma. So that's the really weird semantic word games they want to play about what's mandatory, what's not mandatory. And that's the weird game that they were playing the entire time, is they understood, we can't directly force people to get vaccinated. So how do we massage our policies in such a way that we can indirectly take the entire coercive force of the provincial or federal government and place it on the shoulders of Canadian citizens to make the choice that we make. And they seem to think, well, because we did it indirectly, that means we didn't actually do it.
Because they think, and this is how we need to think about this theologically. It's because they think that they're God. Right. So and the reason I say that is because, number one, God is the one, right? For all those pastors that threw Romans 13 out like confetti, Romans 13 is clear that all authority is established by God to operate in accordance with his rules and his requirements. So that means fathers, parents have a certain authority in the home. Elders have a certain authority in the church. Governors and elected officials have a certain authority among the populace, and ultimately God has supreme authority over all things. So there's delegated authority that's given out, and that delegated authority is allowed to demand certain things and operate a certain way and dish out punishments in different ways, right? So the authority in the home, a dad is allowed to say to his children before they've done something right or wrong, without actually dishing out the consequences for their actions, can in a preventative way say, I don't want you to go here. I don't want you to engage in this activity. I forbid you preventatively from doing that for your protection. That authority has been given to parents in the home. That same level of authority has not been given to elders or to the state. The state does not have the authority to say, before you've done something right or wrong, we're going to punish you as if you've done something wrong and fine you for it and really, really hold the threat of coercion over your head. That's outside of their scope. That's not an authority they have. So the reason I say they're being God is because that's the first thing they were doing, right? Getting the jab, not getting the jab is not a matter of right and wrong and not breaking laws. But what they're saying is you've done nothing. And so before you even do anything, we're going to preventatively say, we forbid you from doing this, or we require you to do this. And if you don't, we'll punish you for it. So that's only God has the ability to be supremely and ultimately authoritative. And then really quickly, the next thing is not only are they saying which laws you can, right? Here's what you must comply with. Here's what you must do and you must not do. But the other thing that they were doing is they were playing fast and loose with which rights supersede other rights, which again is also something that only God can do. So the reality is the right of an individual to work and provide for their family is a right given to them by God as image bearers who have been created to take dominion, to work the ground, and to produce something with our hands. That's not a privilege, that's a responsibility, and it's a right that God gives us. So if a person is unable to work, or for whatever reason, if a person has that right or that freedom taken away from them, the only person that has the authority to do that would be God. He's the only person who has the authority to say, I forbid you from working, which is what he says once a week on this one day a week, I forbid you from working. But he also does it by making people sick and killing people. So he has the authority to exercise the you cannot work. So when the state says we're now also exercising that authority, they're trying to be God. And they're saying that some rights supersede other rights, and we will determine which rights apply and which ones don't. So the state is trying to be God, which they've been trying to do for the last who knows how long, but especially in the last 3 years. So Christians, think about this correctly and theologically. What we're dealing with here is a state-God complex, not a benign, benevolent group of elected officials.
Yeah. Well, I was saying, I realized I was on mute there. It certainly goes back to Babel. we know that much. It seems like the institution of the state apparatus from almost the get-go in Scripture went poorly, and it's tried to set itself up as a counterfeit God. But what we also want to bring into this conversation is the fact that when you say that getting vaccinated or not getting vaccinated, it matters adiaphora, not either right nor wrong. It's a matter of conscience, right? Those matters. Christian theologians have said, okay, in those cases, then that is a matter of Christian conscience, and each individual will have to stand before the God who created them, and they're servants of Christ, and they will have to give a justification to their Lord and Master, the Lord Jesus Christ. So they will do that before him, and we should allow for freedom of conscience in those areas. Why? Because Christians have understood, especially since the Reformation, this doctrine was fleshed out in full, that neither state nor church is Lord of the conscience or family. In fact, there's one Lord of the conscience, and that Lord of the conscience is God himself. That is why conscience rights in the history of the British Commonwealth have been protected. That's an area that the state cannot coerce.
It's outside of their jurisdiction.
It's outside of their jurisdiction. And it is outside of, and this is what a lot of churches got wrong too. It's outside of the jurisdiction of church. That is exactly what Martin Luther was. We say, we love to like go back to the Here I Stand confession, and we love to talk about, that's exactly Martin Luther's point, that neither state nor church, which were, you know, inappropriately connected at that point in history as well, that they're not Lord of the conscience, that God is Lord of the conscience alone. Christ is Lord of the conscience. So therefore, the church and the state must shrink back on these areas. But they didn't do that. They didn't shrink back on these areas lest they you trample over that which is sacred. Instead, they said they are essentially Lord of the conscience, and they tried to bind consciences throughout the pandemic. And to get around that and to say they weren't through indirect or direct means, it's just a lie. It's
reality.
Not true.
Reality cuts against it, right? Like just anecdotally, my friends. My dear friends who owned a restaurant north of Kingston who would not enforce any proof of injection policy, when public health came and fined them, it wasn't because they just violated a policy. When the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario revoked their liquor license, it wasn't just because they didn't abide by a policy. It's because they were told what to do by the Ontario government, and they exercised their freedom and said, no, we will require neither of our employees nor of our patrons to show us proof of any private medical information. And their business was attacked. They were fined and they suffered for it from the state. So don't tell me it was just a policy, not a mandate. Or the other restaurant in Kingston, again, a dear brother in Christ, who said, I won't require this lawless proof of injection for my employees or for my patrons. They took his business by force. They have since rented that place out to someone else. And he still has several dozen thousands of dollars in court fees looming over his head as he appeals it. Don't tell me that's just because he violated your policy. Because the people who wield the police authorities and the health authorities are not just individual business owners. That is the provincial and municipal government that are doing that. So don't lie to us and say it was just a policy. Don't try to spin your word salad. We know better. People went to jail for this. Churches still have millions of dollars of fines over their head for this kind of thing. Don't say you didn't mandate a jab thing. You did, and you punished people who wouldn't bow to you, and you tried to make an example of everyone that wouldn't offer the pinch of incense upon the altar of Caesar Ford and all of his goons, and then you celebrated those who did comply. So, Dr. Moore, sir, with respect, you are a liar, and you have done what has been supremely harmful to Ontarians. And the reality is that woman who shared in that panel, whose family members died and suffered, that's your fault, Dr. Moore. You are the one who's responsible for the deaths. That blood is on your hands because you did in fact threaten and coerce people. And because through your policies and through your influence and through your whatever, you made it so that people couldn't be free. You limited their rights. You took from them what is given to them by God and directed by God alone. You decided to be God. You punish people for it, and much death is on your hands. We know better. We won't be deceived by you. Matt, final word. Take us home.
Well, every single person is going to have a give an account of how they've acted throughout not only these last 3 years, these last 1,000 days, but for every careless thought or action before the throne of Jesus Christ, who is the Lord and the King of all. And no semantics or no word games or no silly tricks are going to avail in that hour. And that is a reality that not only you and I have to reckon with, not only our listeners to the show have to reckon with, but every single elected government official in this country and around the world for old times. They have to come to the realization that they will have to give an account to Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, for everything that they do, and he will exercise perfect, just judgment in doing so. And the reality is, unless if they repent of their sin and to turn to Christ, grab hold of him through the instrument of faith, that they will spend eternity in hellfire for lying, for being deceitful, for all manners of sin. And that's a call that we need to call everybody to. Examine yourself. Do it right now of how you acted and how you continue to act and what your current estate is, because it is a question of utmost importance, and we will call our public officials to account, just as we call our listeners and our viewers to give an account of themselves before Christ. So anyways, those are some of my thoughts, and I think it is despicable. I think over and over and over again, throughout this 1,000 days of the pandemic, our government officials played word games, manipulated the situation, and now, as it comes out, to see that what they did was not justifiable, that it was just as draconian as people like ourselves were warning, they're now trying to retcon the situation and get out of the responsibility that they rightfully deserve for the actions and policies that they put in place. Those are my thoughts. Everybody, we're so thankful that you've tuned in. We do appreciate it. We have another program coming this week. We hope you would check out all our various different programs, which you can check out on our Rumble and our YouTube pages as well as the various podcast catchers that we are on. But until next time, Galatians 5:1.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.
Friends, we're posting new content multiple times every week throughout our various shows on this channel. So you're going to want to subscribe to it and hit that notification bell. That way you stay up to date with everything that we're releasing here with the Liberty Coalition Canada.